Status of the Shishmada's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki, ISKCON's Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantaraj Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki, Srila Sanatan Goswami ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanande, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So again, some of you may have come expecting our regular Wednesday evening program, and we would be having kirtan right now for the auntie, but we're having a special seminar on this new book, which was distributed first of all at the Ratha Yatra, very big book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Srila Sanatan Goswami. We began last night and we're going to continue right now, and we'll also continue tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Last night we went from 7 till 9. Tonight, let's see how it goes. They're distributing to Sada, I suppose, at what time, 8:30? Anyway, we'll see how it goes, and maybe we'll try and finish a little earlier than we did last night, because I think they're going to be distributing prasad at 8:30 or so. Now, those of you who are new to this, who have just walked in this evening and are expecting perhaps the Wednesday night program, if you'd like to be able to follow and get the basic idea of what we're going to be discussing this evening, then Mukunda Prabhu out there on the book table, out on the other side opposite the book table, he has still a few more of these overview guides to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So I would suggest, it's up to you, but I would suggest that it would be a good idea to get one, and then you can follow what we're going through right now. So last night we began with just a very general introduction. What is this book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which we've just started distributing now? It is, you know, like the first really major new publication by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust since they finished the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, so that means 20 years or so. So it's very, very significant. Now, the volume which is being distributed currently and which many of you have is part one of the whole book. And there is a second part which is considerably bigger than part one, although part one is already 800 or 900 pages long. But part two is much bigger, and we're assuming it's going to be divided into two parts, I mean two books, two volumes, that part two, each of which will probably be more or less the size of this one particular volume, part one, which is being distributed currently. In other words, it's really a very major production. So we're explaining last night that this first part, this first volume which is available currently, it is the story of Narada Muni trying to find that person who has received the most mercy from Krishna. Who is the greatest recipient of mercy from the Lord? Which is, in a sense, it's just another way of saying, who is the greatest devotee? Really, it adds up to the same thing. So we should bear that in mind. We should understand that. It is not arbitrary that the Lord gives mercy here, then he just gives more mercy there, and then he may just give some more mercy somewhere else also, in a sort of whimsical way. No. In terms of the advancement of the different devotees, of the particular devotees, Krishna gives more or less mercy. And the more advanced, the more pure, the more sincere, the more advanced the devotee is in loving Krishna and being free from material attractions, the more mercy Krishna gives. So when we say, when Narada Muni says to this devotee, that devotee, he's just about now to meet Lord Shiva. He's just about to meet Lord Shiva, and we'll see Narada in a mood of extreme ecstasy just runs up to him and tells him, it's you. You are the one who's got the most mercy. So what he's saying, in effect, is you are the most advanced devotee. You are the greatest devotee. In effect, this is what it adds up to. So anyway, last night, we began the story of Narada's quest to find that devotee who's got the most mercy, or the most advanced devotee. We covered two chapters in part one, that first volume. There are seven chapters. So we covered the first two, and if you happen to have your overview book with you, then just look at the first, very first page, in which this in fact was compiled by Bhakti Charu Maharaj mainly. So the first chapter then is to do with earthly situations. People who are devotees but in an earthly context. Then, so that we went through last night, and there were two devotees in that category. They're not famous devotees, but they're devotees. One was a very pious, very opulent, and devotional Brahmin devotee. So I won't go through all the details of what happened, but Narada went up to him, and just like we said, what he's going to do with Lord Shiva in a minute or two when we get there. He went up to that Brahmin devotee and said, it's you. You have got the most mercy. And then explained certain reasons why. In that case, of that Brahmin devotee, Narada said, because you're so wealthy and you're so charitable, that shows that you've got the most mercy. Plus, you're ready to use all these things in the service of the Lord. So then that Brahmin devotee denied this. Said, no, I haven't got much money. I don't give much in charity. If you want to really meet someone who's got a lot of mercy, more mercy than me, from the Lord, and who has more money and is more charitable and some other qualifications also, then there's one king in South India. And he is just amazing. Anyone who comes to his kingdom, they just get tons of prasadam. They never have to worry about anything. There's always a place for them to stay. The crops grow without anyone cultivating the fields. Rain falls only at night and just as much as is needed. And in his kingdom there are many temples of the Lord and also temples of demigods and different things that Brahman said. So this king in South India, he is actually the recipient of the Lord's greatest mercy. So then Narada Muni went down there and he met that king. And sure enough, things were pretty amazing down there. It was like there was a permanent festival going on. Oftentimes, actually for that matter, just a few days ago, but when we finished the Ratha Yatra festival, and we did this, as I say, a few days ago when we finished this year, then we sort of jokingly say to each other that, oh, why did we have to stop? Like on the Tuesday. And we jokingly say, well, let's just go down and carry on. Permanent festival, it would be nice, wouldn't it? But there in that king's kingdom, it was really like that. It really was a permanent festival. It was quite incredible. And in various ways, opulence, charity, food distribution, and social conditions, people, the population was very peaceful and they loved the king. So things were very nice. Narada saw that. He went to the king and told him, you have got the most mercy, and explained why. These different reasons we've mentioned. But then the king said, no, 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 no. I've got no mercy at all. I'm so busy running this kingdom, I've got no time to even chant my rounds. Anyway, various things he said, denying that he had mercy, what to speak of the most, any mercy from the Lord. And then he said, you know what? The person who really has the greatest, or the people, he said actually, who have the real mercy, they're the demigods. And amongst them, Indra. So that was at the end of the first chapter. The king was directing Narada, go and see Indra. If you want to see someone who's got the mercy, he has an effulgent body. Everyone there is extremely pious. And, and ultimately he said, the Lord, Vamana, is there as the younger brother. As the younger brother of Indra. So he's really got the mercy. That was the end of chapter 1. And off Narada went to see Lord Indra, which took us into chapter 2, which you see there on the first page of the overview little booklet, is called Heavenly. So Narada went there and he found Indra, and anyway, we won't go into the details, but there was a similar exchange, that you're the one who's got the most mercy for this reason and that. But Indra said, no way, I haven't got any mercy. You know, when the demons stole my kingdom, then the Lord came and got it back for me. But by using cheating means, I felt embarrassed when he gave it back to me, that I got it back through the use of means like that. And you think he's kind to me? But don't you know he stole the Parijata tree and fought with me and defeated me and then stole that tree? Different things like this, Indra says, I got no mercy. Then he says, but if you want to meet the person who's really got the mercy, it is Lord Brahma. He's in charge of the whole universe. And he lives so long, it's like he's deathless. Many reasons, Indra presented. So off Narada Muni went to Brahma Loka and he met Lord Brahma. And again he told him, it's you. You are the one who's really got the mercy. And he explained these different reasons why. And Lord Brahma said, no. What mercy? I've got no mercy. Even though I live a long time, I'm always afraid of dying. I'm so busy managing the universe, I've got no time for anything. And I'm an offender. Didn't you hear that recently I stole the Lord's cowherd boys and calves? So what sort of devotee am I? What sort of mercy did I get? And all my associates, my main right-hand men, they're also offenders. Indra, he's my right-hand man. He sent that huge rainstorm and Krishna had to pick up Govardhan Hill to protect the devotees. And Varuna kidnapped Krishna's father. And Yamaraj kidnapped the sons of Krishna's teacher. So what sort of mercy have I got? I'm just in a terrible position. But if you want to know who's really got the mercy, I can tell you who. It's Lord Shiva. So that took us to the end of chapter 2. Lord Brahma told Narada Muni, you must go and see Lord Shiva, not the Lord Shiva who lives on Mount Kailash within this universe, but the original form of Shiva who lives on Shiva Loka, which is beyond the material world. That Lord Shiva, that popular demigod who we all have heard of so much, he is the local Lord Shiva within the universe on Mount Kailash. But he's not the original. The original lives in Shiva Loka outside the material creation in a liberated area. So therefore, if we look again on the first page of our overview booklet, we'll see that this chapter 3, which we're going into right now, is titled Beyond Material Nature. So that's where we're going right now. So the basic approach we're taking and the main point which is being presented through all these different incidents, Narada meeting this person and that person, and then they're discussing about the mercy and what are symptoms of mercy, and the person is saying how he hasn't got any mercy, but someone else has. So there is like a specific format which is used, more or less. That is that Narada Muni, when he arrives at the next person's place, in this case now, Lord Shiva, then Narada Muni celebrates and just glorifies this next person, Lord Shiva here, that you've got the most mercy, and explains why. Many of those reasons have already been given by the previous person who pointed Narada Muni in the direction of that next person who he's just met. So he repeats some of those and maybe throws in a few new ones, reasons why this next person's really got the mercy, or even sometimes he doesn't mention some of them, so we kind of have to tie the two up within our minds. The reasons given by the previous person and what Narada is saying now to the next person, why they've got the mercy. So the format is then Narada arrives very blissfully at the next person's place, explains why that next person has got the mercy. The next person says, no, I've got no mercy, and explains why, which in many cases involves like defeating some of the points that Narada has made in trying to establish why he has got the mercy. Like in the case of Lord Brahma, Indra had said that, you know, you think I've got the mercy because I'm a big controller? Boy, Lord Brahma's a much bigger controller than me. So he's really got a lot more mercy than me. So then Narada went and told Lord Brahma that. And Brahma said, what? You think I'm in control? Look at the way this universe is going. It's a mess. You know, the demons are coming and attacking my right-hand men, the demigods. We have to call for Lord Vishnu to come and save the day. And everybody else, you know, all the human beings, they're all just falling down under the influence of Maya. So you think I'm in control and I've got the mercy because I'm running things nicely? you must be joking. I'm totally out of control, and therefore I've got no mercy. It's just, it's chaos practically. So this is the type of system. So then that next person then argues against the idea that he's got the greatest mercy, and then says, but I can tell you who has got the mercy, and then directs Narada to that next person. It's basically like that. And the idea, the lesson, what we're really meant to gain from it is an understanding of, first of all, what may be the mercy that these people have got, and how it isn't really the greatest mercy. There are people who've got greater mercy, until we come eventually, which won't be tonight, but eventually we come to those people who do have the greatest mercy. And then it'll become very clear, because we've been through all these, so many people, going higher and higher and higher, more mercy, more mercy, more mercy. But then we see how there are defects. So in this way we can understand the positions of these different people, and how on one hand they're fortunate in one sense, but on another hand, in another sense, they're not really that fortunate. And then when we come to those who really have the mercy, then we'll see so clearly how they're just outstanding in terms of having got the maximum mercy. Okay, so let us go now into chapter 3. And we are going to follow quite closely the overview book. I'm going to work from the overview book and throw in a few extra points where they may not appear so clearly in the overbook, or maybe something got left out for the sake of brevity. So the point now is Lord Shiva. Is he really the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy? Or in other words, is he really the greatest devotee? Let's go and see. So off Narada Muni went. And you remember, right at the end last night, we explained how Lord Brahma had said that Shiva has got so much mercy that if you think he's different from Krishna, you're an offender. So somehow Narada, this point, really got stuck in his mind. So Narada went flying off to meet Lord Shiva, and he was chanting, Shiva, Krishna, Shiva, Krishna, like they're the same. So off he went out of the universe, out of the material world. After all, this chapter 3 is beyond material nature. That's the title. So here we see then, point number 1. Off he goes. Off goes Narada Muni to Shiva Loka. And then as he's just flying in from a distance, he sees there's Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is just in ecstasy meditating on Lord Sankarshan, surrounded by some devotee associates. And the whole atmosphere is just blissful and wonderful. Lord Shiva's dancing in ecstasy, glorifying his Lord, who is Sankarshan. So, Narada Muni, this is now point 1, if you've got the big book, is covering verses 1 to 4. This is described in the big book in verses 1 to 4. So Narada Muni comes in and again he says, it's you. I know it's you. You have got the greatest mercy. I can see it. Look at you. Look at you. So from verse, 5 and 6. Is it 5 and 6 here? Narada Muni starts glorifying Lord Shiva, repeating basically what he heard from Lord Brahma, who happens to be the father of both of them. But Lord Shiva, you know what he did? he grabbed Narada Muni and stuck his hand over his mouth. So Narada Muni couldn't glorify him and say he got the most mercy. This is a very effective technique. Srila Prabhupada, with all due respect to babies and their mothers, even more particularly, Prabhupada, when he was giving class and babies would, cry out as they're prone to, Prabhupada would tell the mothers just to stick your hand over the child's mouth and don't, be sentimental and just, bounce your baby and wait for the baby to be quiet. Just go bang and that's it. So that's what Lord Shiva did, bang. And Narada Muni, he was just muffled. He couldn't say anything. And Lord Shiva just grabbed him and embraced him and asked him. He couldn't quite understand what's going on. So Lord Shiva asked him, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing? I don't understand. Are you all right? Maybe you've been in the sun too long, or something like that. So Narada, in verses 7 and 8, Narada glorifies Lord Shiva. It's not mentioned here in the overview book, but he started chanting a Rudra mantra. Some Rudra mantra beginning, Namaste Shivaya something something something. So Lord Shiva this time blocked his ears. He just blocked his ears and he got angry. And he told Narada Muni, just be quiet. I'm just the servant of the servant of the servant. So just stop this nonsense. So it says here, now we're over the page, point 4, and now we're into point 5. It's verses 12 to 15 in the big book. So Narada Muni, he feels a little bewildered. What to do now? I want to glorify him, but he's so strongly opposed. What to do? So Narada Muni, he did a rather clever thing. He did a rather clever thing. Let's see. He said that, in effect, he said, you are the head of a sampradaya. Now, the thing is that this is true, and Lord Shiva knows it, so he can't really deny it. This is Narada Muni being intelligent. He wants to glorify him, but he sees Shiva is so, sort of upset about it, so he doesn't want to be offensive. So he makes sure he says something that Lord Shiva can't deny. So he tells him that you know the confidential glories of the Lord and you distribute them. In other words, you're the head of a sampradaya, which is a fact. And Krishna, well, he says, your mercy is aspired for by the devotees, which is true. Those who are in his sampradaya. Just like we have special respect for Lord Brahma or Lord Chaitanya. So, the devotees in Lord Shiva's sampradaya, they have special respect for Lord Shiva. So you see Narada's being very clever here and very careful. He doesn't want to disturb Shiva. But then he starts getting kind of a little more carried away. He says, Lord Krishna glorifies you. Shiva starts to get a little agitated. Then he says, not only does Krishna glorify you, sometimes he worships you. And sometimes he takes boons from you. So when he does this, it says here, point number 6, Lord Shiva slaps his hand over his mouth again. That's enough. No more of this nonsense, please. Yeah. See, it's actually a fact.
These things are actually true in the pastimes of the Lord. For example, not that we are perhaps so familiar with some of these stories, but Sanatana Goswami brings out the point that in the Vamana Purana, there are two stories. In one of them, Krishna receives the Sudarshan Chakra by the mercy of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva somehow arranges that Krishna gets the Sudarshan Chakra. This is there. It's like historical fact. Of course, the Sudarshan Chakra is eternally the Lord's weapon. So this is just like a pastime. Just like Krishna appears to be the child of Devaki and Vasudeva. But he's not really, it's just a pastime. So, Lord Shiva, by his mercy, Lord Krishna got the Sudarshan Chakra. It's really just a pastime, but still it happened. So Narada, you know, is kind of glorifying Lord Shiva more, but he's still thinking that what I'm saying is true, he can't deny it. But even though it was true, and Lord Shiva couldn't deny it, still he put his hand over Narada Muni's mouth. Then there's another incident there also in Vamana Purana, where Krishna got another... Well, Lord Shiva gave him a blessing that he would have as his son, Sambha. He was some special celestial demigod or something, I forget the details. But by the blessing of Lord Shiva, Krishna got Sambha as his son. So these things are true. Of course, it's all pastimes. Sambha is eternally the son of the Lord. But for the sake of the pastimes, it's working like that. And Narada Muni has said that. But in point number six, Lord Shiva just puts his hand over Narada's mouth and says, look, you know, how dare you remind me of what an arrogant, proud rascal I am. I was so puffed up, I thought I could give a blessing to the Lord. Just see what sort of ignorance I'm in. This is now... Now Lord Shiva is beginning to refute. So it actually goes sort of back and forth. Narada says a few things, Shiva says a few things, Narada says a few more things. So at this point, Lord Shiva, this is now verses 16 to 18 in the big book, then Lord Shiva denies that these are displays of the Lord's mercy. It's not the Lord's mercy that he took a blessing from me, but it just shows what a rascal I am. I'm so puffed up, I thought I could give him a blessing. So what sort of mercy have I got? I haven't got any mercy. It's all just part of his pastimes, that's all. So then Narada, section 7, 7, 8, 9, and 10, in fact. They could actually just be one section altogether. But this is now Narada Muni really making his main glorification. He really gets into it now, glorifying Lord Shiva. So there are a few points mentioned here, but there's quite a number more. So let's go through these ones, though, quickly, which are in the overview book. So Narada says, you're so dear to the Lord, you can't commit offenses, it's not possible. Sometimes it may seem that you have done, but they weren't offenses. Sometimes you gave boons to offenders. But because you got so much mercy, there were loopholes in the boons. So the offenders got no advantage out of the boons. You get the idea. It's kind of a little subtle. So now, that is mentioned here, but there are examples in the book. If you look in the big book, we're now, let's see, going from verse 19 to 34 in the big book. So, Narada Muni gives specific examples of how apparently Lord Shiva made some serious mistake, giving some demon a special boon which helped the demon like be even more demoniac and more offensive to the Lord or the devotees of the Lord. But because Lord Shiva had so much mercy, then even though those appeared to be boons to make the demon more demoniac, but there were loopholes in the boons and they didn't work. So in other words, the demon ended up being defeated, actually, as a result. So there are examples. First example is Banasura. Yeah, Banasura. Well, this is a slightly different point, but very related. The Lord was just about to kill Banasura. That's in the Bhagavatam. But Lord Shiva came and prayed to the Lord, please be merciful to this foolish demon who was a devotee of Lord Shiva. So when Lord Shiva prayed to the Lord like that, the Lord had his chakra there. He was just about to let Banasura have it. But Lord Shiva came at the last moment and prayed on behalf of Banasura. And the prayers had so much effect on the Lord that not only did the Lord spare his life, but the Lord gave Banasura a Vaikuntha form, just like his own, a four-armed form. And gave him a position as an intimate associate of Lord Shiva. So just see the position of Lord Shiva. It's amazing. This is what Narada Muni is saying. Anyway, back to the idea of offenders. So the example is given of Jayadratha. You may have heard of Jayadratha. He's mentioned in Mahabharata. He was the one who was mainly responsible for the death of Abhimanyu, Arjuna's son. So Arjuna then took that vow to kill him the next day, or else he'd commit suicide. Anyway, the thing is that Lord Shiva had given Jayadratha the benediction that he could defeat any of the Pandavas if he fought with them individually. However, the benediction did not work completely. So therefore he was not able to defeat any of the Pandavas. He was just able to sort of frustrate them. And then that's shown by eventually Arjuna killed him. Yeah. So there was like a loophole in the benediction. And then part of that benediction was that whoever caused Jayadratha's head to touch the ground, cut his head off and his head would fall to the ground, then that person's head would fall to pieces. So Arjuna knew that, and when he killed Jayadratha, he cut off his head with an arrow and made it land in Jayadratha's father's lap. And Jayadratha's father saw, my God, what is this? And tossed it off his lap. And it landed on the ground and his head fell to pieces. So Lord Shiva gives these benedictions, but there are loopholes in them. So he gave one demon named Gargya, who's someone we are not really familiar with. He's the son of Gargamuni, actually. But he's a demon, somehow. So this Gargya, He wanted a son who could kill the Yadavas, the Yadu dynasty. Lord Shiva gave him the benediction. Yes, let it be. But the benediction didn't work completely. His son was Kalayavana, if you remember him. And he wasn't able to kill the Yadus. He was just able to harass them a bit. That's all. So these types of examples are given then by Narada Muni. So then, let's see. Oh yes, in point 7, the last thing that said, when someone offends you, you don't take any offense. Can any of you think of a classic example of someone who offended Lord Shiva, but he didn't take any offense? From Srimad Bhagavatam. From the 6th canto. Chitraketu, well done. Chitraketu mocked Lord Shiva. He saw Lord Shiva sitting with his wife on his lap, surrounded by sannyasis. And it looked so odd. Here are all these renunciates, and there's Lord Shiva in the middle with his wife on his lap. So he laughed, and Durga cursed him, and he became Vritrasura. But Lord Shiva was totally unaffected. Now, this is an incident we're not familiar with in point 8. Lord Shiva asked a boon from Krishna. I want to be greater than you. He did, actually. This is in a book called Brihat Sahasranam. Now the thing is, Lord Shiva, here it says, Narada is saying, there was nothing wrong in you asking for that boon, that you wanted to be greater than the Lord. It's not arrogance. That's what Shiva has said, that I'm arrogant and proud before the Lord. I try to put myself in superior positions. So Narada says, no, there was nothing wrong with that. Because actually your idea was that you wanted to become a devotee. And we all know that Krishna considers his devotees to be greater than himself. Yes. So by asking him for this position, can I be greater than you? Then you are stimulating Krishna to say, all right, you can become my devotee then. And then you'll be greater than me. Yes. Oh, and Lord Shiva was thinking that if I ask him, can I become your devotee? Then Krishna, who's very humble, will think, no, 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 you can't become my devotee. You're better than me. So you shouldn't become my devotee. So if Shiva asked him, can I have a position greater than you? Then Krishna would say, all right, you become my devotee. So it would work kind of like that. Lord Shiva heard the reason he thought of doing it like this. It's an interesting little story. It's there, I mean, it's referred to in the big book. But Lord Shiva had heard once how one time in Dwaraka, Krishna was playing dice with Rukmini and losing. And he wasn't very happy about that. Maybe Rukmini was giving him a bit of sauce. That, you don't know how to play dice, do you? You need more practice. So Krishna, wanting the favor of the two dice, Krishna told the dice that, you know, my devotees are more glorious than me, hoping that the dice would become inspired and become his devotees, and then he would win. So it happened like that. Okay, anyway, I hope you got that point. I mean, it's a little sort of roundabout. But his idea actually was to become a devotee, but he didn't want to ask for that because Krishna is so humble. But if he asked, can I become greater than you? Krishna would immediately say, yes. And then he would remember, well, that means you're going to have to become a devotee because only my devotees are greater than me. So then he'd say, all right, you can become my devotee. So like that it worked. So then Narada, point 9 in the overview book. Krishna is so pleased with Shiva and his wife Durga that he has given them his own power to give liberation. Lord Shiva and Durga have been given power of attorney by Krishna. They can give liberation to who they like on behalf of the Lord, and it's just like if the Lord did it. And then, it's not mentioned here in the overview book, but important point is that Krishna allowed Lord Shiva to marry his own sister. Who is that? That is Durga, who was born to Mother Yashoda, taken back to the prison by Vasudeva. Then Kamsa tried to kill her, but she flew out of his hands. So that Durga became, who is the sister of Krishna, the daughter of Mother Yashoda. Krishna allowed her to become the wife of Lord Shiva, or allowed Lord Shiva to become her husband. So this means that Krishna really takes Lord Shiva very seriously. Then he said, last thing he says to Lord Shiva is that still, even though she is just such a qualified woman and just so amazing, but you are so advanced that the only reason she is so dear to you is because she's Krishna's sister. And therefore you're so concerned to take care of her so nicely because she's Krishna's sister. It's not because she's your wife and there's some attachment or attraction. Not that at all. So you, therefore we can understand, you have the most mercy. So now Lord Shiva responds. This is point 11 in the overview book. In the big book, Lord Shiva responds from verse 35 to verse 41. So, Lord Shiva, it's mentioned here briefly in the overview book, point 11. He says, how can you say that I've got mercy, any mercy? I am the presiding deity of mundane false ego, which drives everyone away from Krishna. And it's not mentioned here, but it is said in the book that not only am I the presiding deity of it, I'm under it. I have false ego. So therefore I think I'm some great person, Lord of the universe, head of a sampradaya, giver of knowledge, giver of devotion, bestower of liberation. But I'm ashamed of myself that I'm so much in tamagun. I'm just so much in the mode of ignorance. I destroy the whole universe after a while. I just get so carried away with my ignorance, I just destroy the universe. So what sort of mercy do I have? Actually, I'm terrible. I'm a rascal. It's mentioned here. Shiva mentions that when Krishna was trying to take the Parijata tree from Indra, this Indra's already referred to that incident, then when the Lord was taking the tree, I got so bewildered that I came and fought on behalf of Indra. and tried to stop the Lord. So what sort of mercy has he given me? I have no intelligence. He hasn't given me even that much intelligence. I took the side of Indra against him. So what sort of mercy have I got? And then, at that time, it's in Padma Purana, actually. At the time of... There's an incident in the Bhagavatam where Usha, the daughter of Banasura, gets married to Aniruddha, who is the grandson of Krishna, and there's a whole battle. Banasura fights against Krishna, and Lord Shiva comes and fights on behalf of Banasura against Krishna, and of course Krishna defeats them all. Then, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the stories in the Bhagavatam, and this part isn't, which is referred to here in the overview book, that Krishna, Lord Shiva says, Krishna thinks so little of me that he told me, write some scriptures or commentaries on scriptures which will take people away from me, from Krishna, which will bewilder people and make them atheists and just fall down. So if Krishna wants me to do that, what does he think of me? He obviously thinks I'm just worthless. So I've got no mercy. And he says that to Narada, that you say that the Lord has given me this power of attorney to give liberation. And you say that this is mercy. Sri Sri Radha Radha Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So, you say that this is mercy, that the Lord has given me the capacity to give people liberation. But don't you know what the devotees think about liberation? The devotees think that liberation is demoniac. They think it's terrible. And because I give that liberation, the devotees, they don't want to have anything to do with me. They laugh at me. Because, you know, it's one of the qualities of advanced devotees. They just deride even the conception of liberation. It's one of the characteristics of pure devotional service, given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. So Lord Shiva is saying that, you know, I give this impersonal liberation. It's terrible. And the devotees, they just chastise me and look down on me and they don't have anything to do with me. They despise this liberation. So then, that takes us through, let's see, to number 11 now. Oh, wait a minute. Where are we? No. Number 12. So Lord Shiva now makes his counter-proposal. You say I've got the mercy. I say that's ridiculous. But I can tell you who has got the mercy. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha. They're all pure devotees. Now, an interesting point, which if we just for a minute look back at the first page of the overview book, then we see that chapter 4, which we're going on to shortly, is called Devotee. So actually it is really, when now the discussion is moving on to the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, now we are coming to some standard of real pure devotional service. All these other people we've been meeting in the meantime, you know, arguably there's some other sort of influences there, some other factors there in their devotional service, in their...